Talk 101 FM, first with news and talk in Decatur. I'm Tara Nickerson. You're listening to The Daily Wrap. Jeff Lucal is in the studio with me. It's 4:11, 88 degrees right now in downtown Decatur. And we've got a special guest joining us on the line. C. Stephen Tucker is founder of the Small Business Insurance Services, .com, also healthcare policy team leader for the Illinois Tea Party, and a man who really knows his stuff when it comes to this Affordable Care Act. And, Steve, we welcome you to the program.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Steve, how you doing?
Good. How are you, sir?
Good. Thank you.
Well, we're going to dive right in and talk a little bit about the Affordable Care Act. And, you know, one of the things that actually Jeff and I have talked about many times is the fact that there's so much to this that it's almost impossible for the average person to have a full grasp on what Obamacare is and what it means.
And we've heard so much about it, and it seems to always be changing a little bit. Steve, I wondered if I could ask you about a couple of those changes.
Yes, indeed. Go right ahead.
Well, anybody who's paid any attention to this at all for the last few years knows that the president always said, if you like your policy, you can keep it, right?
That's right.
So my question, Steve, now that we're, 4 days from the exchanges opening and about 90 days from full implementation, is that really true? Can you keep your plan after December 31st if you like it? And if you can't, why not?
No, unfortunately, the president lied. And it's really, that lie has affected millions of people already around the country and will affect millions more starting December 30th, 2014. So first I'll address the first part, and that is those who have lost their plans since September 23rd of 2010. On that date, the medical loss ratios were implemented under Obamacare, and the president loves to tout that wonderful benefit where you could get a rebate check from your insurance company.
Right, now the average...
Yeah, and he still talks about it today. Well, the rebate checks are anywhere from $56 to $160 a year in rebate checks. That's the average return, right?
Right.
Well, the price that was paid for that in the individual health insurance market is that we lost 13 health insurance companies since the medical loss ratios were implemented on 9/23/2010. What are they? The MLR ruling states that if you underwrite as an insurance company less than 50 people, then you must reduce your profit margin, not your profit margins, your operating margins, not your profit margins, down below 20%. And if you have a situation where you're underwriting more than 50 people, so that would be group carriers, then you have to lower your operating margin down to 15%. And so operating margin is what it costs to be a health insurer, what it costs to pay shareholders, what it costs to manage risk, all of these things. And so the larger carriers were able to reduce their operating margins. The smaller carriers, you know, the one with the good prices, good deals, they all decided to pull out of the individual major medical market. And the vast majority of those 13 carriers were gobbled up by the bigger carriers like Aetna and United Healthcare. And what happens when an individual health insurance company pulls out of the individual market? Guess what happens? You lose your plan. And millions of people have lost their plans. One of the worst stories was Guaranteed Trust Life Insurance Company out of Glenview, Illinois. When they pulled out of the individual major medical market, no larger carrier decided to buy up their block of business. And so the people who held those policies simply lost them. One of them was a client of mine from Naperville, Illinois, and I met with her about 11 years ago, and we put in place what's called a HSA, which is a health savings account. And she really liked the idea. Her family liked it, and they spent about $250 a month in their health insurance premiums. So they just took that savings and they put it into a health savings account, and they kept putting more than that in, about $6,000 a year. And they chose a $5,000 deductible for the whole family with 100% coverage afterwards for the whole family. Fast forward 11 years and they had about $50,000 in their HSA account. She receives a letter from Guaranteed Trust Life on May 1st, 2010. And you can see this letter at truthaboutobamacare.com. And it stated that Guaranteed Trust Life will pull out of the individual major medical market in your state, and we will be offering you a reinsurance policy. And the reinsurance policy will not pay any claims until you meet your new high deductible. And the new high deductible was $25,000 per person.
Wow.
She couldn't possibly have that much cash laying around, Steve. Who does?
Not at all, especially when she's going through cancer treatment. She's got enough stress already, and then she loses her policy. And the first thing she said to me when she called me at my office is, I thought he said we could keep our plans. Now, That's the millions that have already lost their coverage. You can see the exit letters and every health insurer who's pulled out of the market at truthaboutobamacare.com. What's happening in 90 days from today, there's a lot.
Steve, are you there? I'm afraid we might have lost him.
I think he's driving down. I think we lost him. I bet he'll call us back.
Yeah, we'll get him back on the line. Oh, are you there?
I'm still here.
Okay, sorry. We must have just hit a bad area there for a second, but now we can hear you crystal clear.
Good, okay. So in 90 days from today, if the Republicans fund Obamacare, then the exchanges will open because the money to implement the exchanges has already been spent. There was $1 billion appropriated for implementing them. In Illinois, we got $136 million. So that's what we've done thus far. What has to happen now is that the funding for these exchanges, so that people can get these large insurance subsidies, for instance, a family of four making $50,000 a year will get a health insurance subsidy between $8,000 and $10,000 immediately to artificially lower the massive cost of Obamacare-approved health insurance. And then that money will not be going to them. It will go directly to the insurance company. So this is the largest transfer of wealth from the Federal Reserve, a.k.a. the taxpayer, to the insurance industry in U.S. history. And once those people get those entitlements, once they get that subsidy, they will never, ever vote against anybody who tries to take it away from them. The other ramification is that all of these insurers that are inside the exchange, there are six of them, and three of them have existing policyholders now. They are Humana, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois, and Aetna. And this is individual and family policies now. Those policies that they have in force already that were sold in 2011, 2012, and 2013, they all must be fundamentally transformed on December 30th, which means they have to include all of the essential health benefits, and they have to have their deductibles and coinsurance arrangements changed. They must accept a new effective date of January 1st and then pay the rate increase that comes with adding on all of these 10, quote-unquote, essential health benefits. So this is the first time in 20 years in this business that the federal government has reached into a state and actually changed a private contract between a policyholder and the insurer. That, my friends, is what's coming if Obamacare is funded.
You know, all of this is very scary for people. I think that they don't fully understand the funding of it. I guess given the state of our national debt, I guess they're left shaking their heads going, where is this money coming from anyway? But one of the other things that, was, I guess, exaggerated in order to make Obamacare sound good was that, because of the healthy young people that would be buying into the exchanges, it would make the care more affordable for everybody else. So, as we age, obviously our health care is more expensive. Is that true? And, is it going to happen? Are we going to see these estimated, nearly 3 million young people enrolling in Obamacare exchanges?
That is true that it's the goal. It is not true that the goal will be achieved. What you're referring to is community rating. And community rating is a piece of legislation that has been proposed and implemented in 8 states, mostly by our friends on the left who happen to be legislators. And what they do is they come into a state and they survey the health insurance market. And they look around the state and say, you know what, people over here in the state are paying more for health insurance than people over here. So we like equality. We want everybody to be the same. So what we're going to do is we're going to make all premiums the same. And so what happens is that those who are younger, who have a nice policy with a nice high deductible, and they know they won't have claims for many years, and they got a nice low premium, they now have to subsidize people who are older and sicker. And so their premiums go up by an average of $200 to $300 a month. And the definition of a split second is how long it takes a young invincible to cancel their health insurance policy the moment they get that rate increase. And then what you have left in the risk pool is just older and sicker people. And what happens to their premiums? They go up big time.
So, Steve, I looked in there was an article in the Decatur paper today, and it talked about how low all these premiums were going to be for everybody. But it also talked about how in Peoria, Rockford, the same policy was going to cost a different amount of money for individuals, even if the same age, non-smokers. And I thought one of the ideas was to not have that.
That's correct. And all of those numbers you're seeing are predicated on the hope that 2.7 million minimum young invincibles buy health insurance. That's where all those numbers are predicated upon. If you want to see the real numbers, you look at the Society of Actuaries report, where they're showing Illinois premiums going up by 56%, Wisconsin premiums 86%, because they're not under the delusion that all of these young people will buy health insurance, and they know why they're not going to. The fine for not buying health insurance is 1% of one's MAGI, modified adjusted gross income. So if you take a young person making $25,000, $30,000 a year, 1% after taxes, which is modified adjusted gross income, taxes and retirement, which is what you have left after, is about $280 a year. So are they going to pay $280 a year as a fine, or will they pay $3,000 a year, $1,800 a year, $1,500 a year, $5,000 a year, depending on where you live? They're going to pay the fine instead. And we're not repealing EMTALA, which is President Reagan's law, the Emergency Medical Treatment and Leave Act. And that allows anyone, still today, who's 250 yards from any emergency room to receive treatment for free. And then, twice next year, we're going to allow them to buy a health insurance policy from any carrier in the country with no regard to pre-existing conditions, no reason to have proof of prior coverage. And that will, they'll be able to do that from January 1st of 2014 until 3/31 of 2014. And then again, from October 7th of 2014 to December 15th of 2014. So you tell me, is a young invincible going to buy a $1,500 to $3,000 policy or more, or will he pay the fine knowing that the fine is minuscule compared to the cost of health insurance? He can still go to any ER for free, right? And he has two times a year, 5 months in total, where he can game the health insurance system and get a policy if he actually does get sick.
So, yeah. Steve, let me ask you a quick question. What if they don't sign up? What's going to happen? Because the numbers aren't going to work.
That's correct. And if you don't sign up, you'll pay the small fine. And that's one of the most horrible things about this law, is that even after the subsidy, there are families that cannot afford the $3,000 to $5,000 annual cost for health insurance even after the subsidy. So they will simply opt out and pay the minuscule 1% fine. Even when the fine graduates to 2016 to 2.5%, run those numbers. That's still less than health insurance costs. So the majority of people will not go in and buy health insurance. They'll opt out and pay the fine, and only sick people will go into these exchanges, which is exactly, by the way, what happened with the temporary PCIP, the pre-existing condition insurance plan that they said would last all the way till 2015. Nope, ran out of money a year early.
I remember that they had far fewer sign up than they thought, but they were far more expensive.
That's correct, because they never had health insurance before. They had no reason to keep coverage before, because they could just hop on whenever they get sick, right?
Right.
And then that's what I was telling everybody. And still to this day, it is President Barack Obama who is denying coverage for people with pre-existing conditions, and he's been doing it since March 5th.
When his plan ran out of money.
That's right.
You know, I'm a little bit fascinated by this whole idea of people being able to buy into something after they're already sick. It just seems almost morally wrong to say that you can pay a minuscule fine and not have health insurance, but as soon as you get cancer, you can, you know, get in at the same rates as everybody else. It just seems to me unfair to the people who are paying their premiums, month after month, year after year, and really paying higher premiums every year. You know, it just seems that the burden should be shared among everybody who wants to benefit from the system.
That's correct. And it is very unfair to people who have been keeping their health insurance coverage in place. But, as you know, the worst words in the legislation are the secretary shall. It gives the acting director of HHS, which we know as Kathleen Sebelius, more power than anyone in government to be able to alter the law whenever she sees fit without approval from Congress. And she has actually been part of writing 20,000 new pages of legislation. But one of the things she did is she changed the way the law would cover pre-existing conditions. The way it was written the way what Mitt Romney did in Massachusetts, where you could literally wait until you were sick, buy a plan anytime throughout the course of the year, use it for as long as you're in the hospital, and then cancel it the next day. And that ended up bankrupting most of the insurance companies in Massachusetts. 20 of them left the state, and today Massachusetts still has the highest premiums anywhere in the country. So Sebelius said that's not going to work in all 50 states. It's just impossible. It's going to bankrupt the industry. So we're going to look at some of the states that had intelligent options for pre-existing conditions long before Obamacare. And one of the states they looked at was the state of Ohio. And in Ohio, They have a an annual open enrollment period once a year. It's usually in the months of February or March. And that's where all people with pre-existing conditions can get a plan from any insurer on a guaranteed issue basis. And they must do so, but they can only do so, right, during a one-month period throughout the course of the year. So what that does is it forces the policyholders and the consumers to keep their health insurance plans because they know that if they get sick outside of that 30-day open enrollment period, they can't get coverage for pre-existing conditions. So she took that option and she rewrote the law in 2011 so that now you can't just jump on and jump off whenever you want. You have to get on during open enrollment periods. And that will only be starting in 2014, 1-1 of 14 to 3-31-14 and then 10-7 to 10-12-15 of 2014. And then after that, it'll just be from 10-7 to 12-15. So they're going to try and emulate Medicare open enrollment. But adverse selection will still exist because people will opt out and pay the fine, and they'll wait, if they get sick, to jump on the plan when they can get on at least once a year.
So these rates that I've seen in my paper, and I'm sure that you've seen them in numerous other papers throughout the state, with Governor Quinn coming out in the last couple of days announcing them, how long are those low rates going to last when they don't have enough people coming in to subsidize those low rates, you know, enough young, healthy people? How quickly do you see those rates taken off?
Very quickly. The disadvantage to the health insurance company is that once they issue the contract, it's a one-year contract, as it always has been.
Did we lose Steve?
Yeah, I think he's dropped out again. It's hopefully we'll get him back here any second. But I will just I will say, I was shocked by the numbers that they were, you know, bringing out yesterday.
The lowness of the
yes,
Steve.
Still with me?
Yeah, I'm
back. Sorry, guys.
So how long are those? You said they've got a 1 year contract.
Yeah, they have a 1 year contract with the health insurer. So the disadvantage to the insurer is that when all they find out that all these young invincibles are not going to participate, they're going to have to keep those rates locked in. But upon renewal, those premiums will go through the roof. And those low premiums, I have to emphasize, are predicated upon the young invincibles participating. They're not going to do so to the level that the president hopes they will.
So kind of like a semi-bait-and-switch kind of deal, get the good rate for a year and then look out?
That's correct.
I want to just ask real quick about the numbers that I saw. I mean, one of the numbers I saw was like $249 for a basic plan. Now, what does basic plan mean? I mean, do we know what's covered and what's not covered on these this basic plan? Because that's a pretty low price tag.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, the reason it's low is because, for instance, if you buy it as a family, there are four plans that are going to be exchanged: the bronze plan, the silver plan, the gold plan, and the platinum plan. And the way that they are different is their actuarial values. So the bronze plan will pay 60-40 after your deductible. The silver plan will pay 70-30 after your deductible. Insurance company pays 70, you pay 30. The gold plan pays 80-20, and the silver plan is a 90. I'm sorry, the platinum plan is a 90.
90-10.
Yeah. All right. Are you there, Steve? Well, I obviously having a little bit of trouble with the cell service as he's communicating with us via cell phone. But some of this stuff is so complicated, Jeff. I don't know how the average person can.
I'm back.
Yep. Hey, Steve. We were just talking about how this is so complicated. The average person
is going to struggle.
How are you going to follow that?
It's very difficult. That's why I've been writing on the law for 3 years, speaking about it around the Midwest for 3 years. All of this is contained at truthaboutobamacare.com, but there's an article that says, what will health insurance cost in the exchanges? And in it, it links to the Kaiser Family Institute's Advanced Premium Tax Calculator. So you can go in and see how much of other people's money you get to lower your premium, right?
Okay.
So you can go there and see how much it costs you. You can see exactly what each plan covers. But Americans need to know, when they buy a bronze plan, if it's a family plan, they're looking at a almost $12,000 risk exposure on that bronze plan. It's very, very much exposure compared to today's actual health insurance plan because it follows the HSA COLA adjustments. So the family is paying, many of them paying, a lot of money for that plan. And on top of the premiums, they're exposed to an almost $12,000 annual risk as well.
Wow.
That's a little scary. Steve, let me ask you another question, a little kind of a political nature on this, all right?
Yeah, go ahead.
We've been reading and we've been hearing about this, how Congress kind of exempts himself. I think Senator Reid said, well, that's just the way the law is written. And they were worried about a brain drain from their staff, so they exempted their staff, or if they didn't exempt them, they gave them the big subsidies that, you know, everybody else isn't going to be able to get a hold of. Do you think a political issue people are interested in? And second, is what I'm hearing true? Is that true? Because that's what I'm hearing. Is that true?
It is very true. Americans need to understand that more than 4 million Americans have been away from this law since 2010, and the majority of them along with the labor unions. So they say there's only 1,600 waivers. Yes, when you include the entire state of Maine as one waiver, there's actually a lot more people waived than 1,600.
So that's okay. One waiver for the state of Maine.
That's correct. So there are millions already waived. Most of them are politically favored Democrats. Most of them are in the labor unions. There are corporations as well, right?
Right.
Right. But those waivers are all running out on January 1st of 2014. This is why Richard Trumka, the head of labor unions who pushed this, met with Mr. Obama in the White House 2 weeks ago and said, hey, will you give us the same bailout that you gave members of Congress? Because members of Congress were never exempted from Obamacare, only the president, the vice president, and their cabinet members. Well, Congress had to go in the Obamacare exchanges like the rest of us. But they realized that a congressman makes $176,000 a year. And he's way over the allotment in order to get a subsidy to artificially lower those premiums, because an individual has to make no more than $46,000 a year to get a subsidy. A couple has to make $68,000 or less, and a family of four has to make $94,900 or less. So they knew they weren't going to get any subsidies. So they just had Barack Obama waive his executive fiat one without the approval of Congress or Senate, and they just gave them a 75% bailout on their new Obamacare premiums, too. Courtesy of the few, the proud, the 51% of us left paying income taxes. So they got their bailout. The big business has been waived for a year. Congress has been given a 75% tax reduction. The only people that have to deal with law are us. We the people.
Yeah. Extreme frustration. I can hear it in your voice, and I know it really is how so many of us feel. Because we've seen our private insurance rates continue to go up, or group insurance plans continue to go up, and we know that we're not going to get a better option in the exchanges, even if we want to. No. It's highly frustrating.
It is indeed, and it's more frustrating that the Republican Party has been funding this bill since their first chance to defund it on March 15, 2011, in House Joint Resolution 48. That was the first continuing resolution after our large Tea Party rinse in 2010. And all of them have been funding it. And in Illinois, all of our reps at that time, besides former Congressman Joe Walsh and former Congressman Tim Johnson, every one of them was funding that legislation in every continuing resolution. Their excuses for doing so were, well, the president's not going to get reelected, so we don't want to take a stand now. We'll just fund Obamacare. Or certainly the Supreme Court will strike this law down. It's diabolical. There's no way it'll pass. It's unconstitutional. So I won't take a stand on this continuing resolution or this debt ceiling. I'll just keep funding Obamacare. Because remember, the House holds the purse of Congress and controls all spending. So now those excuses are over with. The president was reelected. The Supreme Court ruled the law as constitutional, calling it a tax instead of a fine. Right?
Right.
So now is the time for these men and these women in the U.S. House of Representatives to stand united, as they did on Friday of last week, less one Republican, and voted to defund the legislation and send House Joint Resolution 59 over to the Senate. Unfortunately, we've got about six Republicans, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, Mitch McConnell, and the other three, that are going to allow and vote for a cloture vote, which will allow Harry Reid to carve out the defund Obamacare part and then send it back to the Senate. I believe that's what's going to happen tomorrow during the crucial Senate vote. Then it comes back to who? The House of Representatives. They Friday and make sure that there is no funding for Obamacare, come hell or high water.
Steve, what do you think the odds are they'll stand up? Because I put those odds at real low.
Yes, I have no faith in John Boehner, Eric Cantor, or most of our House Republicans, and frankly, most of them here in Illinois. So I'm not hopeful, but I'm optimistic, and I'm praying, and I'm calling, as all of us should be doing. Just because these Republicans in Illinois, these congressmen, voted to defund Obamacare last Friday. That was a symbolic vote. The real vote where the rubber hits the road is coming next week when Reid sends this bill back. That's why we need to be burning up every one of their phone lines, every single one of them.
You would think they would notice the extreme and continuing to grow unpopularity of the law.
Correct.
But apparently not.
Yeah, they're afraid to, quote-unquote, shut down government. They don't realize that government was shut down every year during the Carter administration, four times during the Reagan administration, twice during the Clinton administration, and the last time in 95 was closed down for 21 days and we got welfare reform. We lost a couple of House seats, but we gained two Senate seats. So amazing things can happen when the government is not spending our money recklessly. And if they can't stand for one time to shut down this government during the Obama administration to stop this diabolical law before those subsidies go out, they should all switch parties.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've really enjoyed the conversation and gotten some good insight on really what, you know, some of the fundamental flaws are with Obamacare. So what you suggest is that people get on the phone. That's really what they've got to do at this point.
Absolutely right, and especially to Senator Mark Kirk before the end of this week. So tomorrow's the time to call Mark Kirk. Mark Kirk has said that he will not vote for cloture, but I don't trust Mark Kirk. So we should all be calling him and making sure that we respectfully but firmly demand that he represent the will of the vast majority of his constituents in Illinois.
All right. Well, we really appreciate your time today. Stephen Tucker has been our guest, insurance broker, subject matter expert, especially when it comes to the Affordable Care Act. We really do appreciate your time today.
Thank you, Steve.
We've got more ahead on the Daily Wrap. This is Talk 101 FM. We're always first with news and talk in Decatur.